staying here with ASAP Frontline with a special edition celebrating the 50th anniversary of the American College of Emergency Physicians. And right now, this one's being recorded here in Washington, D.C. at our Leadership and Advocacy Conference. And got a chance to catch up with Dr. David Wilcox, who I believe is the longest serving attendee at the Leadership and Advocacy Conference. But we wanted to get into that to talk about this evolution of leadership and advocacy, which you told me just a few moments ago didn't used to have the "and" in it. Was leadership advocacy is two different conferences. And so we want to talk about some of that evolution of these conferences, why they're important, how they add value to not only the folks that are here, but also to the physicians in our profession and our patients who aren't able to attend. So Dr. Wilcox, thanks for joining us here on the front line. And let's start off by talking about, you know, the evolution of this type of conference.
Yes, so in the early 80s, ASAP had been around for 15 years or so. But already it had become apparent that training leadership for the future was an important thing to do. And so they started having leadership conferences down at headquarters in Dallas. And, you know, they had them generally each year, typically in the spring, because the, you know, our fall meeting is always in the fall, so you kind of put it at the other half of the year, and hopefully people could attend. And that worked well, but later in that decade, in 1987, it had become apparent to us that we needed to be more politically active to advocate for our patients. And so they developed the legislative and advocacy conference. And of course, you had to do that in Washington, D.C. So for the next several years, and I didn't mention, we did that first meeting with the American Medical Association, because at that time they had political savvy that we didn't have, but we have run the programs ourselves every year since then. So for several years, we kind of had to make that decision, you know, the leadership meetings in Dallas, the advocacy meetings in Washington, D.C., they were usually within a couple of weeks of each other, so a lot of people were kind of, you know, having to decide, can I do one or the other or both, or, you know, it was difficult each year. So the ASAP Council actually had a resolution that told the college, look, we need to combine these two programs. And they did. And obviously, if you're going to do advocacy, you kind of have to be in Washington, D.C. You know, it was a little bit of a push because there is a cost to transporting all your staff and everybody for a conference, you know, to a remote site. That's why leadership was done at headquarters, because it was more cost effective. But as with anything in life, you know, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. And if it costs a little more, well, so be it. And so we did have the conference in Washington, D.C. here. And it has, you know, morphed to some extent over the years, how much of it is leadership and how much of it is political advocacy. And, you know, now we generally come in on Sunday, and, you know, it lasts till Wednesday. And, you know, the Wednesday portion is most of your the leadership stuff, although there is others sprinkled in on the other days also. But the other days are heavily towards, you know, what's going on and on the Hill and visiting your members and everything.
It was a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that we outgrew the site where I used to go, which was the Omni, where we first started, the Omni Shoreham, where I would go the first few years I was here. I think I've been to about 8 or 9 now in a row. And now we're over here at the Grand Hyatt. Because of the growth in needing more space and, you know, it's got pretty good proximity to the White House and the Capitol and all that stuff. But how have you seen it now? When was your first year you attended?
Yeah, that was in 1987.
And that was the advocacy conference.
Well, that was the political one, yes. And then by the mid-90s was when it became the combined conference. And to be honest, I probably don't remember all the different places that we have stayed. The Omni that you mentioned, we were there for 5 years in a row. They gave us a decent price because they are located a long way away. I mean, if you want to visit the National Zoo, they're out.
Yeah, it's right there.
It's right there.
But that's it.
But for everything else in Washington, it's a long way. So we complained for several years, and finally we've moved again. We have been at the Hyatt here in the past. Mm-hmm. We've also been at the Lowe's L'Enfant Plaza. We were there for a few years. So, I mean, we have moved around a bit, but you kind of want to be fairly close to the hills because that's what we're here to do, is to work on the political stuff. The leadership portion, obviously, you could do anywhere, but the advocacy portion, it's important to be in Washington and not too far from the Capitol.
Right. And how have you seen it evolve since the late 80s, early 90s when you combined? How have you seen the conference evolve in terms of content, goals, and even volume of participation?
Oh, well, yes. When we had that first legislative meeting in 1987, there were a handful of people here. I was the only one from Connecticut, and when we went to do our visits on the Hill, I made all the phone calls myself. And that's when I realized that you cannot set up meetings and go from the House side to the Senate side back to the House side. You kind of got to get your House ones together and your Senate ones together and not walk back and forth across the Capitol grounds there. But I made all those calls myself and had to set them up and do everything. At that time, Connecticut had 6 representatives and 2 senators. And I wouldn't necessarily meet with all of them, but I'd usually hit 5 or 6 of them, during the time that we were here. And originally the leadership meeting was 2 days, and then the legislative meeting was 2 days, and now, of course, combining them, it winds up being 4 days. And that was one of the complaints initially, was that they thought that would be too long for people to want to be here. But that turned out not to be the case, because over the years, and it was free, originally, because they really wanted to encourage the membership to consider becoming political advocates for ASAP and for our emergency patients. And so, little by little, there were 50 people coming, and then there were 100 people coming, and 200 people coming, and for the last several years, we've been at the 500 to 600. I think last year actually was a little over 600. So we get quite a few people, from around the country to come. I mean, this is an important thing to do. It's important that we develop our leadership for the college itself, but it's also important for the members to be here and meet, learn about what's going on the Hill, and then actually meet with their representatives and senators to advocate for the things, the bills that we feel are important.
Interestingly, if you've never been involved with political action, advocacy, those sorts of things, it can be incredibly frustrating from a scientific mindset, which physicians tend to be, when you come up here and understand that 1 + 1 may equal zebra, as opposed to our linear thought process of, if it's truth and it's fact and it makes sense, then that's what's going to happen. So getting in there and advocating are big issues this year. Of course, opioids being a big issue, some mass casualty type issues as well. And then the drug shortage has been a huge conversation. And so, that's the whole goal, is advocating for the needs of all emergency physicians, our staffs, and our patients as well, to do the best thing for them. And that's actually one thing I enjoy about it, is the fact that I feel like in emergency medicine, we can do more to, probably more than about any, is advocating for our patients, because our lives get better as those providing the care through the successes and resources that our patients have. And so I think that's why it's very important. And interestingly that you had that one trip, that you were the one from your state and you set up your meetings. Apparently, Soapbox still doesn't completely buy into that walking across thing, because every single year, a Kentucky contingency makes four or five walks across. Five was the maximum time, walk across the Capitol Mall. If you've never been in the Capitol Mall from the House of Representative offices on one side, the Capitol in the middle, and then the Senate offices on the other side, it seems like it should be a relatively close distance, but it's actually pretty dang far. And inevitably here, last year we were earlier in the year, and so the weather was cold, actually had some snow, but almost inevitably we either have rain or really hot and humid. And so you're walking around in your suit, you get pretty steamy. If you're fortunate enough, you find a legislative staffer that's willing to take you through the underground aspects of the access across. But it's a fair amount of walking. You're not going to bring your uncomfortable shoes and walk around D.C. when you're advocating. We typically have a group of two or three attendings from Kentucky, plus one or two residents, you know, from U of L and the University of Kentucky. This year is our first year that we've had two separate teams rotating around, because as Steve Stack has rotated off with his duties at the American Medical Association, he's with us up there as well. And so he had a Central Kentucky team, and we rotated around and caught everybody. I think we did a total of 7 or 8 meetings. We actually added one at the end of the day because it was raining so hard yesterday that we decided to stick around and see if anybody else was willing to meet, and all the people in the offices were willing to meet because it was raining so hard that they really didn't want to leave the offices at that point. So why not go ahead and have a couple of more meetings up there as well. Let's roll into some of the importance of it. You know, a lot of, it's a 500 physicians, that's 500 to 600 emergency physicians. That's a good number, but that's still just a scratch or tip of the iceberg. And I understand we have a lot of folks that have to stay home and work and do their other obligations and things like that with family, but why is it important from a global sense of our patients in emergency medicine for us to be up here, and not only for the leadership but also the advocacy side of emergency medicine?
So we are emergency medicine physicians. Nobody understands emergency medicine better than us. And, you know, we interact with the entire rest of the House of Medicine. And we are the ultimate safety net. We see all of society's shortcomings. When you have nowhere else to go, you come to the emergency department. And the one of the real keys here is persistence. You keep coming back because the staff and the members of Congress themselves don't all have a good understanding of medicine in general, never mind emergency medicine in specific. So very often you do meet with staff members, and they are typically young, and they do change offices. So each year you're educating new people. And then periodically your representative or your senator will change. And so you start re-educating them also. But I would say that out of the 30 some years I've been doing this, probably about halfway through, I did feel some frustration because of that, that, you know, it just seemed like we kept coming back and had to start over again year after year. And but the longer I keep coming back, I really have realized that persistence is how we succeed. And NEMPAC has become very potent on the Hill here. We are one of the largest medical PACs. And it is important to contribute to NEMPAC because that's what gives you the dollars to gain access to the congressional members. And the more we are here and talking with them, emergency medicine is held in high respect. I mean, we come in with the white hat issues. Mm-hmm. We are the ones that come in talking about our patients. You know, we're not the ophthalmologist coming in and saying, you're not paying me enough to do my cataracts. We are here talking about how do we do better to take care of our patients, and what are the bills. You've enumerated the ones that we were concerned with this year, but, you know, there have been many others through the years, and many of them you do. You talk about the same bill year after year for several years until it gets passed, and then you move on to new topics. And of course, new topics surface every year too. So it's not the same topics we're talking about each time, but you just have to be consistent and persistent. And it really has served us well. I mean, the emergency medicine is looked at very favorably. When the members of Congress need to know something, they call us. They call our Washington staff that we have at our ASAP office here in Washington, D.C. to find out about things. And then our staff can contact our members, people who have met with these people in the past, and, you know, get the information that they need.
And with advocating for the patient, it allows us to advocate for every physician and practice situation out there, access to care, regardless of what your employment situation is or what the management situation is. You know, advocating for our patients and the best for our patients is something that really benefits us all. And you know, it's incredible experiences. So I mean, I've had trips up here where mostly met with staffers. I mean, you start to learn the patterns of some of the folks after you've been here a few years. Like, I know that I'm not going to meet with Mitch McConnell unless he's close, you know, unless he's got somebody who's got a close, I mean, he's from Kentucky, that's why I'm meeting with him, is unless he's got a good challenger in an election year. That's when I get to meet with him. Other than that, I see his staffers. You know, you get staffers that are incredibly knowledgeable about healthcare, and that's the first mm-hmm. thing we educate our folks on when we're going to the Hill. Our first thing is we need to check the temperature of the room and kind of see what our knowledge base is to know, are we digging deep into the weeds on healthcare, or is it somebody who slides in the last second, somebody who's new, somebody with minimal healthcare experience, and we're really starting from the basics, such as prudent layperson and emergency medicine and EMS, and, you know, basically going with definitions from the very start. And really, it's mainly about building relationships, having those relationships that we're up there on the Hill, but also can we build relationships that we tend to be, that we become the resource for acute care medical issues. I find that a lot of times there's a complete misunderstanding and a lack of information and education and knowledge of really what emergency medicine is. You know, it's, a lot of it's driven by media reports with overuse and high bills and all this other junk and garbage, and it's really missing the whole purpose of what emergency medicine is, as really that hub, safety net, catchment area, and barometer of the entire healthcare system. And the nice thing about being up here in Washington, D.C. is cool experiences. So I brought my family this time, and we've had dinner with our representative who represents us where we live. We've been to the White House. We've been done a tour of the Capitol. My kids got to vote one night on the floor of the House of Representatives. We've had some nice times with them, chit-chatted with them. In fact, our representatives gave us a tour of the White House this morning. And, you know, so it's fun experiences. You learn things. It's a wonderful educational area. The Washington, D.C. has some of the coolest stuff, museums, restaurants, eateries, diversity of any place you'll ever go. And of course, I love coming to our conference here. We get to see friends and folks we get to see a few times a year for most of them between the conferences. But really, more importantly, you feel like you've really, when you leave here, so when I leave the Scientific Assembly ASAP 18 this year, you know, I feel like I've done a lot for myself, my own practice. I feel like I've gained knowledge and expanded my knowledge and education. Whereas when I leave here, I feel like I've done more for our profession and for my patients. You know, I feel like I've really tried to accomplish something next time I walk in the room that I've talked on these issues. You know, Anthem, you know, with their refusals, huge issue that we've talked about up here, especially for me in Kentucky and states around us where that is going on. You know, advocating for fair coverage for our patients to where they're not put in difficult situations financially because of the care they seek, or even worse off with these policies, delaying or not seeking care when they potentially need it. And so, you know, those are the issues and those are the things we're talking about. And I think a lot of times very few people outside of those close to ASAP and to the conference really know what is going on when us 550, 600 doctors are up here storming the Hill on Tuesday afternoon, running all over the place. And really, and what was interesting yesterday is family practice was up there as well. Trauma surgeons were up there as well. And many of our issues were very similar. And we got to build on each other's conversations, understanding that fluidity of healthcare, and that we don't live in silos, that really what impacts one of us impacts a lot of us as well. So Any closing remarks, thoughts, as you are our senior statesman when it comes to Leadership and Advocacy Conference, Dr. David Wilcox, before we wrap this up?
So it has gotten better over the 30 plus years. You know, you're not quite starting at ground zero. People do actually know a little bit about emergency medicine. During all those years, you know, we had ER and other TV shows, so people started getting a little more familiar with what we may do. You know, I have had the honor of winning the 911 Outstanding Leadership Award, not once, but twice, about 15 years apart. And the first one I got was in 1997. I had convinced my then Republican representative to sign on to Prudent Layperson. And this just tells you, you know, what's old becomes new again, because as you said, mm-hmm. here we are 20 years later fighting that same battle. But, you know, at least this time around, more people understand what Prudent Layperson is. And it is a part of Medicare and Medicaid. It's been written into the regulations. So we have a much stronger standing with it right now than we did 20 years ago when we were trying to explain people what the heck it was in the first place. So things, you know, have actually gotten better over the years. And this, I think if you talk to any of the 500 to 600 people who are here, they will tell you that this is one of the best conferences of the year. I mean, it is a lot of fun in addition to, you know, learning stuff and feeling, as you said, that we're taking a part and that we are actually making a difference. So I really would encourage people to consider it. The registration fee is very modest. I think the registration fee barely covers our meals that are provided to us here. You know, the hotels aren't so inexpensive in DC, but you know, overall, it's a relatively modest priced conference, and for what you get out of it, it really is one of the best conferences of the year.
Example being, we've heard from several representatives during the conference this morning. We had the U.S. Surgeon General speaking with us as well, you know, policymakers giving us a little bit of a behind the curtain look at what's going on, the conversations that are being had, and it's really a unique way of learning something deeper into your profession than is typically what we're going to read in a journal or something else like that. And it is very important. I mean, you talked about the prudent layperson. It's there. Many of them do not understand it or don't know what it means. And that is what is protecting our patients in situations, or should be protecting our patients in situations such as these insurance companies now that are really just not offering or not there when the patients need them in terms of coverage. And so, you know, it's important stuff, really important stuff for the future of our profession and the care for our patients. Because not only are we the providers, but eventually us or our family members are going to be patients as well. So, you know, very important stuff. And Dr. David Wilcox, thank you for joining me, and I guess I can look forward to hopefully in about, I guess it was 5 years ago, I got the 911 award at that point, so about another 10 years, maybe I'll do something impactful enough to receive the honor or earn it, hopefully once again. So thanks so much for your time, a special podcast for the 50th anniversary of the American College of Emergency Physicians, and now 30 plus years into the Leadership and Advocacy Conference in some form, shape, form, or fashion, and well worth your consideration May of next year as well. So, Dr. Wilcox, how can folks get in touch with you? They have more, any questions or thoughts or about leadership and advocacy?
Yeah, well, I've been on the NEMPAC Board of Trustees, and I'm currently on the Emergency Medicine Foundation Board of Trustees. And when I pass out my cards, it's always got my personal email and my personal cell phone number on it. So my email address is D, as in David, Wilcox, W-I-L-C-O-X, 123, at AOL.com. I know I'm one of the last people in the world to still have AOL, but it's free and it works, and I've had it for a quarter of a century, and the thought of changing it is daunting. But my personal cell phone number is 860-916-1370, and I don't mind being contacted.
just contact him at a reasonable hour. You know, we're getting 1,000 downloads a day. We don't need to be blowing him up 24/7, 365. As for me, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com, @everydaymed on Twitter. Also, make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast so that you're getting every episode. We're going to have more than 52 this year because we're throwing out some extras, so more than one a week. So you got some bonus type material such as these with our 50th anniversary for the American College of Emergency Physicians coming up. And until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASEP Frontline.